I don't know why everybody in Pittsburgh needs to know my business and feel free to comment on it. I'm going home to whack off, and that's the last anybody needs to hear about it.
Still queer as folk.
You're listening to the Still Queer as Folk podcast, where each week we take down an episode of Showtime's Queer as Folk TV show to find out if it still holds up 15 years later. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Please click that subscribe button so you don't miss any of our episodes. And if you do like our show, a 5-star rating sure does go a long way with us.
You can find us across all the social media platforms at Still Queer AF, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
This episode is called There's Nothing Noble About Being Poor. It's episode 5 of season 3.
It first aired in the U.S. on April 6th, 2003.
Now, Matt, I happen to know that on that day, Beautiful by Christina Aguilera was the number one song in the country.
And it's a fantastic fucking song. Ah,
fingernails on the chalkboard for me. As soon as I typed up my notes for this, the entire day I was just hearing that song in my head.
You are beautiful, no matter what they say. Words can bring me down.
You sang Oklahoma a couple episodes ago, so.
I know, maybe we'll just do one whole singing episode.
There's Nothing Noble About Being Poor was directed by Kelly Macon. This is her first of 11 episodes of Queer as Folk. She's still a television director and recently did 2 episodes of a show that I really loved called Eyewitness. That was on the USA Network. And here's a quick synopsis of that show. When a young gay couple witnesses a triple murder, they will do anything to avoid being outed in their small town. It was a bit of an after-school special, and it was canceled after the first season. But I thought it was really stylish with really cute gay boys that have sex.
Oh, no. After you described it, I was like, I think I need to check the show out. Story for There's Nothing Noble About Being Poor was written by Cohen and Lippman, executive producers of the show. Sean Postoff wrote the teleplay. He wrote 6 episodes, and this is his first. He was also the story editor for 14 episodes of the show.
Here's a recap of There's Nothing Noble About Being Poor from Queer as Folk, the book.
Police Chief Stockwell's campaign for mayor heats up with Brian joining the team.
Michael has some difficulty making a deposit at the sperm bank.
I hate that sentence so much. Ethan performs in a competition in New York and comes in second, but his looks attract a first-rate talent representative, otherwise known as an agent, who expects Ethan to sacrifice more than he's prepared to.
Ted and Emmett can't agree on the perfect house until Ted gives in to his new lover.
Lover.
I hate that word.
Lover. And Michael sees Ben shooting steroids and dancing boys are dropping... dropping like flies at Babylon.
I did write that one verbatim from the book. I bumped on that too. It's like, dancing boys are dropping at Babylon.
They are dropping the beat, but they're also dropping in like overdose.
It's the beginning of a tongue twister though. Dancing boys are dropping at Babylon.
Very close, yes.
So this episode had a really fresh look to it. There's lots of unexpected transitions, a great weaving of the unrelated stories into one masterful episode. The episode really centered on the continuing saga of Justin and Ethan, but relative to Brian, we also start to see some cracks in Ethan's sexy veneer as the lure of fame starts to pull him away from Justin's idyllic fantasies of domestic bliss.
You see it as a crack in the veneer, but I think someone has something to do with his cracking.
Yeah, so, somebody made the crack.
Oh, someone took a hammer to it.
This contest of Ethan's was kind of interesting.
Nervous? I'll take questions whose answers are painfully obvious for $100.
This devastatingly handsome violinist dazzled the judges at the semifinals and consistently takes Justin Taylor's breath away.
Who is Ethan Gold?
Bing, bing, bing.
You're my muse. You know that, right? I couldn't do this without you.
Sure you could.
Did you think it was weird for somebody as self-confident as Ethan to be that nervous about playing in a competition?
It seems like this may be the most high-stakes competition he's been a part of. Because they've talked about this competition the past couple of episodes, that he was going to play in this thing and that it was, like, it could change his life.
True, but it just seemed like somebody as sassy and cocky as Ethan and so just self-assured of their talent would be like, I got this.
I think, well, especially because he's only showing this weakness in front of Justin. I think if he could have easily put on the brave front in front of his other contestants, but the only time we see him sweating is only with Justin.
It was cute that Justin was there supporting his BF, but I just wanted to see Ethan own this a little more and kind of be like that power top.
Well, but he does. I feel like he does own it in his performance. His performance, I think, is like stunning.
Yeah, until he fails.
Well, he doesn't fail. Clearly, the judges failed.
Yes. Lin Lu beat him up.
But this is where I want to point out again that I am super impressed with the way they create the filming around Ethan playing. I think it looks so incredibly realistic to... It's sort of ballsy to put the camera that up close and make it look like he's really playing and really playing aggressively. And
did the caption say aggressive violin playing again?
It's one of my favorite things ever.
I did think it's really cute that Justin was all like, that's my man looking when Ethan started playing. I loved it.
I mean, I would say the exact same thing. I would like look over at the other contestants who are watching my man crush it. And yeah. Like, you see that? I'm hitting that.
This is a great transition of that violin music across all three storylines. So it's nice work from Kelly Macon there. There is a really interesting juxtaposition of Ethan's finale with Michael's lack finale. Of finale. We'll talk about Michael in a little bit. But
yes, I have thoughts about that whole thing too. It was a very interesting editing between those two moments.
Yeah, at first I didn't really know why the two were going back and forth. Like, what did one story have to do with the other? Why did the music carry through into Michael jerking off? But then I started to see like pure sax from Ethan and the way he's playing. And our listeners are probably throwing rotten vegetables at like, our Facebook
who cares
page right now.
About Ethan?
Yeah.
It did a lot for me to hear him finish the way he did.
Michael?
Oh no, Ethan. Because like you said, Ethan finished. Michael was unable to do so before the clinic closed.
I can't wait to talk about that later in this episode. Yes. Oh, we finally see some struggling in the characters and Ethan doesn't win. Normally, like, everybody wins.
Yes, it was fascinating for them not to go with the easy route of saying, well, yeah, of course Ethan wins. He's the best. And to see that bruised ego... Because the camera does like that really up close zoom that we've seen in prior episodes.
The Heifetz Prize goes to Ling Lu.
And he is just crushed. He doesn't know what to do with it. He doesn't know. Like, it's even difficult for him to try and put on the brave face of, you know, it's just an honor to be nominated. I'm so happy.
Well, as you recall, he kicked Justin out of the apartment, said he could focus on this contest without distraction. But then Justin came back, of course. So do you think that Justin might have distracted him a little too much? That maybe if Justin wasn't there, Ethan would have crushed it a little bit more. He would have had more time to rehearse and less time to bottom.
Based on that audience reaction, he played brilliantly, and I don't think Justin had anything to do with him somehow underperforming. I mean, that crowd was on their feet. They were screaming, bravo. He just somehow got bested by this other violinist.
Yeah, I kind of didn't like what Justin was doing to console him afterwards. And I found that when somebody close to me does a massive creative flop in front of a whole bunch of people, you don't really participate in the dissection of that performance. You really don't talk about the performance at all. You really don't need to say anything. But Justin was just kind of weirdly inserting himself into the, oh, it's okay.
It was the cantabile. The goddamn cantabile. I fucked it up good. My fingers tighten up. I can feel it.
It's okay. It doesn't matter. You are still wonderful.
Yeah, I thought that was just a little...
Well, he said that he played brilliantly. So if anything, he was making sure that he wasn't down on himself. Because that's like the big thing that I've noticed as someone who works in a performance industry is that we can be so quick to want to give notes. Where when the appropriate action is always, you were fantastic. Oh, or just find something to like.
Yeah. It's like the sandwich approach where you say something good, you say something bad, then you say something good again.
Oh, no. You don't even say anything bad. You find at least one thing where you're like, I can compliment this.
Yeah. A for effort. You won the participation trophy.
In the immediate aftermath, you've got to show that you're supportive because it doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help you, especially being like, well, this is what I did think. And here are all my 25,000 notes to the person that I'm supposed to support.
So enter Glenn Bishop, the promoter, who takes the two underage boyfriends out for drinks.
Right.
But that was my note that I wrote before I saw what they did. They went to some restaurant, and I think Justin was drinking a Perrier, and Ethan had what looked like a Coca-Cola. So it contrasted a little bit to what Ethan was saying, like he needed to go get a drink after flopping in the High Fits competition.
Yes.
So his drink was a soft drink. So Glenn Bishop says Ethan must be contractually straight. And I thought that moment really dated the show to 2003, because in 2018, it's an asset. If you look at Troye Sivan, for example, marginally talented.
Oh.
Really cute, though. He's obviously gay. Nobody's hiding that with Troye Sivan.
Well, when you write a song like Bloom.
Troye Sivan is so overrated. We have reached peak Troye Sivan. And like, who is the that other guy in the Olympics, the figure skater? Adam something?
Adam Rippon, who is amazing. Shut up.
Yeah, we reached peak Adam Rippon like the day after he was done skating.
No.
It's like enough already.
I disagree. I'm actually just a big fan of Adam and Gus Kenworthy's friendship.
Whatever happened to Adam? I never even see him anymore.
He was like on the Today Show not 2 days ago.
What does he do?
He was like interviewing someone.
So he was interviewing journalist now?
He was interviewing Cate Blanchett. He was just being he was a correspondent for like the day. He's all over the place. He was also like on Dancing with the Stars. I think he won. Because of course he did. I mean, he's super talented.
I'm a much bigger Johnny Weir fan. I think Johnny Weir has better costumes.
Well, Johnny Weir is now doing like the commentator thing with Tara Lipinski. Mm-hmm. And they're actually hilarious together.
Yeah, it's great.
They're pretty great. But back to the episode. I get what you're saying in terms of that notion dating the show, but we still get like hints of it. Like there was the Luke Evans who played Gaston in the live action Beauty and the Beast. We know he's gay. And then it seemed that there was a period as that movie was coming out, they were trying to put him back in the closet a little bit.
Disney's kind of like a weird brand. I think Disney would rather focus more on the characters, which is a lot of what Queer as Folk did when the show first came out, where early in season one, none of the characters would reveal their own orientation. Because that was always the first question when they were doing press. You know, you go on Larry King, are you gay or straight?
Yes, and that well, and
and they kept it ambiguous.
And even today, like we still have that seems to be the question on everyone's mind. If anyone ever plays a gay character, like how do they lock in? Like how do you access that? Like that was always a thing with I'm sure with Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal when they were doing Brokeback Mountain. I think even to this day, Jake Gyllenhaal kind of gets questioned every once in a while, but only in my fantasy. And
it's don't get me started about that movie either.
Oh, oof. I saw it 3 times in high school. So
he all but raped him in the tent on a rainy night. He just flipped him over and fucked him.
Jake wanted it.
Did he say that?
Oh, he said that.
Not in the tent. No words were exchanged. All of a sudden, they're just fucking.
Looks were exchanged. Exactly. Like that's exactly what happened. I mean.
we've covered Troye Sivan.
Sorry, we're gonna keep Adam going. Rippon. We don't stop.
Who was your Disney guy?
Luke Evans,
Heath Ledger, Jake Gyllenhaal.
I got a whole list. I could go on conservatively for 1 hour on this.
Well,
but to the point of yes, it in some way dates the show because we are trying to show more out gay actors who are playing out gay characters so that there is an authenticity involved. And it seems that a lot of times actors are supposed to, if it's brave of them to play gay, like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. It was brave for him to play that kind of role and he got an Oscar for it. But where are the people that have lived these kinds of lives that are talented actors? And that's why it's such a strong drive now to make sure that when there are trans characters that they are played by trans actors, because what they're out there. So It's interesting that this agent is saying that, like, your sex appeal will only work if it's straight sex appeal.
That might have been the case 2003.
Yes, that we want to make sure that the young women who are buying classical violinist CDs.
Yeah, who are those people?
Have you been in a record store lately, Ethan? In the classical department?
Well, yeah, I make my own CDs. I like to check out the competition, see what Joshua Bell is up to.
Okay, so you've noticed it's starting to look a lot like the rock department. There's no more covers with snowy-haired grandfathers propped up like corpses at their baby grands or clutching their violins. Artists these days are young, hip, sexy, much like yourself.
I'm sorry, what demographic are you really going for?
Yeah, right. It was a nice story. We just had questions about it, and there's some holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that Brian and Michael are walking through the park together, and they come upon Ethan playing his violin, and Michael does not even notice him? Brian just sort of dismisses him, and Michael's just like, oh, well, okay, I'll see you later. I'm going to go see Ben. It's like, hon, Ethan is right behind you playing his violin. He's the guy that you ratted out Justin to Brian. Like, did you not notice that?
Does Michael not? That is where two things. Either the writing was lazy and they just needed to get rid of Michael for the scene between Brian and Ethan.
True.
Or.
Go ahead.
Lord. Oh gosh, where was I going with this? Shoot. Or it shows that Michael really didn't give a shit about the fact that Justin was cheating on Brian with Ethan. I'm going to put cheating in quotes there. But that Michael only cared about using that as ammo against Justin. It was just his way of being vindictive, and that's it.
I'd have to think that he just didn't notice.
Yeah, I think it was just lazy writing.
Right. Brian was pretty sinister.
Who's going to hear you now?
Why do you give a shit?
Because you deserve to be heard.
They wanted me to sell out.
You should do it.
So you can get Justin back?
I don't want him. I just hate to see someone holding on to their integrity for no good reason.
I'd expect you to say something like that. You probably would have played for the Nazis, too.
But it kept me alive for one more day. You're goddamn fucking right I would. All they're asking is for you to play their game. If you're smart, you'll figure out a way to play it to your advantage.
I'd rather work the street, thank you.
That's your call. But there's nothing noble about being poor.
And I didn't really like what he was doing.
Neither did I. I actually really, really disliked it. And I thought, damn, Brian wrecked Ethan's mind kind of easily.
A lot of fans were really rooting Brian on here so that he could get Justin back. But I just see this as a psychotic flaw in Brian to be manipulating Ethan like that.
And I think
you don't do that to a teenager.
Well, and I think it also shows an odd weakness in the character development for Ethan. Everything we've seen has been a man who has no problem being the opposite end of the spectrum to Brian and being proud of it and having no qualms about standing up against it and calling it out as he sees it. So for Brian to somehow find that one little crack and then just start picking at it the way he does, very strange, cruel thing I think he did to Ethan.
I mean, sure, he was good at it. And
he's very good at it, yes.
I just feel like a lot of fans look at this as, yeah, go, Brian, go, but Justin back. Get that little soul patch kid out of here.
But why?
Exactly.
Like, I don't think Ethan is a bad person, is treating Justin terribly in any way. I think I think he's maybe just a little possessive, but like that's it.
I also think that Brian should know that Ethan is going to self-destruct himself, that he doesn't really need any help. I mean, if Brian is just a little patient and gives it some time,
he doesn't have to push Ethan off the cliff.
Yeah, Ethan will take care of that himself.
So what are we celebrating?
You and me being together.
I'll drink to that.
No matter what happens.
Why would anything happen?
I've been thinking about signing the deal.
What made you change your mind?
I can't play on the street forever.
No one expects you to. But this guy wants you to deny who you are. To deny us. There's nothing noble about being poor.
Where'd you hear that?
What I didn't like was that he was really just buttering up Justin to break the tough news that he's going to go play it straight.
And
it's like, let me set the table really pretty for you and yes. give you some hard news.
This is how much I care that I'm going to pretend that I'm not totally madly in love with you.
I didn't like that. Mm. Ethan was just telling Justin his plans, not having a discussion with him about it, like as a couple. Like, honey, yes. I'm really conflicted about this. I really, really want to follow my dream. Well, Ethan, I think that you should blah, 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 blah. Something like that. Like a discussion.
And it's tough because it got played up so much in front. Like Justin explained that to everyone at the diner that this is what Ethan did and how noble is that and how it's clear that he cares much more for Justin than even his career. But then to see this reversal is rough.
Well, Justin had that incentive too. He wanted everybody around him to know that, hey, look, this guy is like doing something for me. I am enough. Yeah. And everybody else was kind of lapping it up and thinking, oh, that's so cute. And then Brian's like, yeah, I'm going to like put a wrench in the works here.
And I don't understand why. What is Brian's end game here with this?
He wants that tight little twink butt back.
I think that's so boring. That's such a
When's the last time you had a tight twink butt? They are not boring.
I mean, from a storyline perspective, I think it is such a boring. Such an easy out to try and get Justin and Brian back together to say like, oh, he just wants him back. Why? Like, he's able to go and fuck as he pleases and do drugs and hang out at Babylon. He doesn't have anyone that he has to come home to now.
Yeah, it's what he wanted in season one. It's like, get Justin away from me. Oh, look, it's the cast of Zoom. Remember that line?
Oh, my God, yes.
What do you think about playing it straight, though, to get a career started? If you were Ethan in this case, would you do it?
Would I do it?
Yeah. Keep in mind that he's only making like $40 a day playing on the street, taking his very expensive violin out into the very cold Pittsburgh winters to earn enough money to sleep on pallets with Justin in that apartment that you believed had no running water.
Right.
Would you do it?
I would want to make my partner part of the plan so that then there could be a great outing of myself and showing how that's good for the world.
Well, keep in mind that the partner in this case had only been a partner for three weeks.
No, they've been together longer than that, right?
This is episode 5.
Yeah, but I'm assuming some time has passed.
Yeah, I don't know how much.
Because then that's a real problem. I think that's the other thing with this show is that we just don't understand the continuity.
Right. So Justin storms into the back room of Babylon just to yell at Brian. I like when he comes up to the guy blowing him. He's like, fuck off.
Oh, the guy blowing him says, I'm busy.
Wait your turn.
You should take a number like everyone else. And you should keep your big fucking mouth shut.
I wasn't the one giving the blowjob.
What did you tell Ethan?
The truth.
There's nothing noble about being poor.
I actually listened.
He more than listened. He signed the papers.
Good for him.
What, that he sold out?
Maybe his recordings will do the same. Although personally, I could never really stand violin music. Sounds like someone torturing a cat.
What about me?
What about you? You expect him to sacrifice his career for a piece of blonde boy ass? Is that your idea of true love, sunshine?
It's about time that Justin gave Brian like a really good tongue lashing. I don't think he's ever really yelled at him before.
No,
has he?
Not like that. Not like saying, why the fuck would you? What is it any business of Brian's what Ethan and Justin do? Why would Brian feel justified to say those things to Ethan? Because he's ineffective. Like, I thought the whole point was, great, he's out of Brian's life. What does Brian care?
Well,
he wants him back without really getting him back. But the way he talks to Justin in this scene is just so stunningly vindictive that I just thought it was a brutal thing to do. And I'm like, why would that then make me say, like, you know what? You're right. I think I should be with you.
Yeah, he was just outright evil. Brian was outright evil here. And just not sure why fans can be like so into the Brian Justin couple at this point. So if you look at Brian and Justin as an overall series arc, sure. If you're watching the show episode by episode, or if you're watching it for the first time, I don't know why you can be like so anti-Ethan and so like pro-Brian and Justin, because Brian
is... fuck this.
Yeah.
He's a terrible person who has just interfered with his ex's relationship. At this point, I don't see the motivation. Like right now in front of me, I don't see the motivation for him to do such a thing other than to be like, I'm just going to be a total dick.
The only motivation is to get him back, and he's going about it in a very, very bad way.
Which we've seen before. Anytime he's supposed to do something for, let's say, the greater good, he goes to the extreme in the worst possible way.
Still queer as folk.
Like what you hear? Be sure to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. We like those 5 stars.
It's still queer as folk. There's more on the way. Story to Brian and Chief Stockwell, and it led off with what I'm going to call a tele-Debbie moment, a telepathic Debbie moment. She does this a lot in this series where she once again explains the episode to us. So she's like telepathic. She is the vocal narrator, like right off the bat. So tele-Debbie, that's going to be our new term. I borrowed the tele from our friends at the West Wing Weekly.
I love that.
Tell a Debbie.
Yes, because we know right away, because as she's trying to garner signatures, or no, she's trying to get people to vote. She's trying to get people registered to vote.
Registered to vote. This seemed dated all of a sudden when Debbie, Vic, and Jennifer are trying to get people to register to vote, because these days it seems like all of the gay community votes, and they're very vocal about it.
Oh, I strongly disagree.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
You know people that don't vote?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because they're fucking idiots.
Well, okay,
I'm sorry.
Enough.
I'm going to be really passionate about this because
I don't know anybody that doesn't vote.
Well, and that's the thing. That's why it's so aggravating when you try and have these conversations and then you find out they didn't vote. And you're like, unless somehow you were prevented from doing your duty, I am not speaking to you again. That's how angry I am at some people.
Well,
because clearly we see in the election of 2016, there were like only 120 million people voted. I found this moment where they're trying to get people registered to vote an incredibly timely scene, oddly enough, because like I think Brian is a prime example of that.
You mean you don't care?
You mean you're surprised?
I mean I don't give a fuck. You know, whether it's the Democrat who pretends he likes you or the Republican who hates you and lets you know it, either way, once they're in office, they're not going to do a goddamn thing. So I say, may the best self-serving son of a bitch win.
If I'm not hurting anything, I don't care. I found it very telling in this episode. And I loved that Debbie was like, you're absolutely insane. Again, this is why I talked about Debbie in the recap episode as one of my favorite characters. She cuts so much bullshit out. It's amazing. While you thought it was dated in a way, I found it incredibly timely. Although I think now, because we're in the mess we're in, people are starting to understand how that apathy played out. And they are now stepping up and realizing we need to rectify this as soon as possible. So, but back to the politics of the episode.
Oh, look, Ted's a Republican.
What the fuck?
Well, okay, let's think about this here, though. The Republican of 2003 is not the Republican Party of today. So I'd like to think that around that time, I'd say 5 to 10 years earlier was when the Republican Party stopped being the opposition and started that march towards the enemy of liberalism. So sure. At the time, it wasn't quite as big of a deal as it is now. I think now if you showed up in a gayborhood and said, I'm a Republican, people would stop short of tarring and feathering you, but would have some words for you. There'd be some disagreements.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
So the 2003 Republican, it's like, okay, that was a little bit of a dated line from Ted there. Because if you said that now, or if you watch that now, you're like, holy shit.
My note literally said, oh, God damn it, Ted.
Yeah.
Because I remember
15 years later.
Right. But I personally do not understand gay Republicans.
Gardner and Brian show up at the Stockwell fundraiser, ostensibly to drum up some business.
Just as I expected, plenty of pricey prey swimming in these waters. Periscope depth, focus. That's Bill Ranson over there. Jerusalem Steel. The redhead beside him is the gatekeeper. Get by her, you're in. Diane Overton, black dress by the bar.
Check.
Kanye Foundation. Lots of good leads through her.
There was something about this scene that I really didn't like, though, and that was that submarine periscope view.
Yes. Oh, my God. I thought it was so tacky.
It just added a weird campy element to it. And, of course, there's a bottom there for Brian to, like, scope in on with the periscope. And
yes,
takes him into the toilet.
At this point, I'm going to not believe for a second that he has condoms for these. I think he greeted the guy.
Yeah, I don't remember in the scene if we actually saw anything like that. Nothing tossed up into the air?
Nope. nothing get torn in his teeth. We just see him orgasming and the guy coming out, fixing his suit, and just goes right back into the party. And conveniently, Brian manages to finish up just before Chief Stockwell walks into the bathroom.
So you're running for mayor?
That's right.
How's it going?
Very well, thanks.
Really? Because with all this money you're raising, should be out in front, but the polls show you're trailing Councilman Deakins.
My opponent is ahead at this point by the narrowest of margins. However, my advisors have informed me that we're well positioned to take over the lead.
So Chief Stockwell is played by David Giannopoulos. He appeared in 8 episodes of Queer as Folk. And he's also been in some of my favorite shows, 24, American Horror Story, General Hospital. I watched it years ago. It's not so much my favorite anymore. NCSI Miami. Yeah. There's something that was striking about Chief Stockwell is that he kind of looked like the U.S. Senator Ted Cruz.
Oh, God.
Like a more dashing version of him.
A more dashing Ted Cruz is like an oxymoron.
So this was really the first encounter with Brian and Stockwell, lays out the future for what those two characters are going to do together. But first, before we move on to some of the runners here, let's talk about these twinks at Babylon.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to point out one last thing before we get into the runners about Brian and the Chief is that I just don't understand his end game.
It's to make money.
And I think this is why everyone kept saying, like, well, are you selling your soul? Or, like, is that really worth it, knowing what he could do to you? And this is my point about his apathy, and that I won't be hurt because of how I look and how I present. So fuck all to anyone else. I'm going to get my money. Bye. And I'm like, is Brian really that greedy?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Didn't want to hear. So that's why then I found it very satisfying that his coffee was in fact scalding.
Debbie heated it up for him.
It's the little things that matter.
So these twinks at Babylon, first the bouncers are just like carrying one through the dance floor.
It's like they were dragging them by their feet, like, oh, there goes another one. It's like they were going to toss them in the trash.
Isn't that the second one that's OD'd tonight? Must be a bad batch.
Some dumb kid who should know not to take candy from strangers.
It's like, Ted, do we not remember in the first season when you had a deal with
There's an episode called Ted's Not Dead.
It was like, that was you.
Yeah,
it was in your own home, but that was you.
Bad batch of what? What are they thinking that this is? Because
it's got to be some sort of ecstasy or something. Some obviously, clearly something that you're ingesting. I don't know if it could be cocaine, but I feel like it's something that it has to be some sort of party drug like Molly or something like that. That is clearly not cut well.
There's a really terrible moment of acting when this twink passes out on the dance floor, like in mid Statue of Liberty dance. He just reaches up for the star and then just like melts down into the floor.
And like Southern Belle faints.
It was obviously like a really fake pass out moment. It's like, don't give these like key scenes to extras. It's like you need a day player for that, not just somebody that you pulled off of the street. Say, hey, take your shirt off
and dance around a bit.
Now we need somebody to pass out. You there.
I'll do it.
Right. Go back and watch it. It was just like this.
No, now I have to because that's really funny.
Should we make a GIF of this one?
Absolutely.
Okay. So Stockwell comes and sees Brian at the office later and says that he found something that can make his campaign pop. And the headline reads, Five Teens in Hospital After Club Overdose. So Babylon is an all-ages club then? What happened to Justin having to use his fake ID Vic's ID to get in?
Well, did he have to use it to get in or to drink?
I don't know. This was just kind of a surprise to me that Babylon is an all-ages bar.
Or maybe it's not, and they just found out that the people who were there were underage.
Yeah, in Chicago, there is no such thing as really an all-ages bar.
No, and these bars are
restaurant.
And these bars are strict.
Yeah. So this is a moment we see Brian starting to become a Sith Lord and turn to the dark side.
I love that. Yes, exactly.
Always two there are.
Because, yeah, the whole point that the chief wants to come out with is that the homosexuals of Pittsburgh are corrupting our youth.
That part's true. Brian corrupted Justin. Now he's corrupting Ethan.
Yes, that is actually true.
Still queer as folk.
Can we talk about Michael's load for a minute?
Or lack of?
I love that lobby scene at the beginning of the show where the looks on the other patients' faces when Melanie and Lindsay are like both kissing Michael.
I thought they were cupping his junk for a second because Lindsay's hand was dangerously close to his dick.
I thought this whole story was a little far-fetched because it's not that hard to get off after all. And why didn't he just bring Ben with him or something like that?
Yes. And
bring his own porn.
And let's talk about dating the episode. I would like to think that if you were to go to be a donor today,
the sperm bank,
there would be a variety of porn to choose from.
I think you should bring your own. I don't think the sperm bank should be like supplying.
I would like to think now they're like, we have Wi-Fi, please connect to it. And
this is a very old joke where the person shows up at the sperm bank, as they were calling it.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, look, there's the porn. It's like, okay.
And remember, the July Hustler is nasty.
Yeah. I mean, anybody.
I was like, what?
Anybody that's showing up at that place to make a deposit should know what they need to accomplish while they're there. And they should bring their own supplies, right?
Yes. I think the sperm bank should only be responsible for the cup and the room.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a very vivid imagination. I don't need any supplies.
Nope.
unless the mailman came along.
Oh, hello. He has a package for you.
Yeah.
And I just love the fact he just like gets in the chair and starts going at it and pulling his pud.
He went about that all wrong, though.
Like, yeah, I was like, he masturbated so weirdly. Like his hand, I was just trying to understand, like, what? How are you... I was like, I think that's your problem. Your technique is just odd.
Yeah. You got to ease into it.
Yeah. It's like,
you grab your butt and you pull. Yeah. There's a interesting moment in the diner where Debbie finds out that Michael could not get off.
How did it go? Huh? Did you shoot your load?
Mother.
Bet it was a whopper. The Crosby side of the family are Italian stallions, all of them.
Oh. Well, this one didn't pony up.
First she asks, did you shoot your load? It's like, if my mother ever said that phrase, I would shrivel up into
nobody
nothing.
Wants to hear that from their mother. Michael's line here.
I don't know why everybody in Pittsburgh needs to know my business and feel free to comment on it. I'm going home to whack off, and that's the last anybody needs to hear about it.
The whole diner was just silent there, but I think that scene would have been played so much better if everybody in the diner just broke out into applause.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know what? You go do it. Good for you.
Go get it, girl.
Yes.
But instead, they're all like, you know, the record went off the needle went off the record and
silent. And I'd be like, bitches, y'all just met the last night at Babylon and y'all fucked through the night. So don't act like you're surprised that someone's going to go jack off, please.
Totally. This little arc of Michael's load, it was comic relief. It just wasn't all that realistic, though.
And I didn't really think it was all that funny.
It tried to be funny. It tried really hard.
I think that's the thing. It thinks that it's being funny,
right,
and it's
right.
Very much not funny.
So Ben the juice pig. I really love seeing Ben just popping off left and right.
It's important that I get it to Mel and Linz as soon as possible.
Well, it's important to me that I get to the gym as soon as possible. Okay, I have to go. Now.
Remember when he was such a perfect live in the now Zen professor into Buddhism and cooking tofu and going to Tibet. Now he's just like tearing up the place and just yelling
he's
at
like,
people.
Yeah. He's I love like, that. He's like, do you still love me? Oh, why the fuck am I here? Leaves. Like, what? What just happened?
Why did Michael sneak into the house later? Remember when he caught Ben shooting up? He comes in the door. He's very quiet. He like closes it silently, tiptoes across the room. It's his house. What is he doing?
I mean,
it's not that late at night. Do you think?
Did he think that Ben was just asleep or and he was just trying to be quiet that way?
It just seemed a little too convenient of a way for him to catch.
For him to Ben just sneak up on Ben, yeah.
Shooting something into his butt. Why didn't he call him out right then and there? It's like, why? If that was you and you came
out
with
like,
your
what
boyfriend.
I'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
The hell what are you doing? Yes.
If nothing else, get off the duvet.
Do that in the bathroom for
right.
Jesus Christ.
Put a tarp
sake.
Down. Jeez.
But so yeah, let's.
Oh, there's something I left out about the Michael scene.
Yeah,
that was a visit to Teddy's Whack Shack.
Yes, I wanted to go back to this too.
Did you think it was funny that Ted is giving advice about jacking off when in fact he lost his mojo not so many episodes ago and nothing was turning him on?
Look, you're making too much out of this. You're creating a mental block. You need to relax. Ease into it.
He was like oversaturated by porn.
But I mean, now that he has Emmett, he has found that mojo again. What I found really interesting was that.
Why is he an expert at?
Was that Raging Hard-On.
Oh, yeah.
Who looked like Ooh. Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that I think we stumbled on to Michael's fetish, superhero porn.
Well, we always knew that he was into superheroes. I mean, Ben is built like a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but here he got someone who I think was not quite as built, but similar built.
That guy was hot.
And then also in the costume, clearly hard.
Mm-hmm.
Woo. But
Raging Hard On. It's like, why couldn't it have just been Rage? Shouldn't
copyright.
That have been Rage?
Copyright, probably.
Michael owns the copyright to Rage. He wrote it.
Yeah, but Ted's the one using it, so he would have had to ask
Michael.
Oh,
right. Good point. Oh, okay, so yeah, that makes sense because there's a little bit of back and forth dialogue about that
yes.
because Ted said, I have you to thank for it.
Yeah, Raging
So I
hard.
Guess that was Rage.
Yeah. It was definitely Rage.
Okay.
Duh. But then he's like, that gets Michael going, so then he grabs one of the cups from like the water cooler to jerk off into? Because then...
Yeah.
I think this is actually a great segue if we wanted to cover Mel and Lindsay for a hot second.
Yeah, this Immaculate Conception moment. Did you see the size of that syringe full of Michael's load? I saw that when it came on screen. I was like, oh.
And I was like, so first of all, that sample has to be contaminated. In no way.
With what?
It yes? just didn't seem sanitary. He's like, hi, I jerked off into this open container and I am running through the park.
Well,
and like trying not to spill because apparently there was a lot of it.
You just need to keep them alive. You don't.
Just. And I just like, first of all, and then Lindsay's just handling it without gloves. And she's like, oh, great. There's a lot.
Well,
great.
She's about to pry Melanie's vagina open and squirt it up there. So I don't think gloves really matter at that moment.
Oh, and that was the other thing is that, yeah, they have this syringe and everything. And it's like, what's the whole point of going to I didn't realize this was a self-serve.
They just have the equipment.
I was like, what? the whole thing just boggled my mind.
Well, I've got something coming up in our hits and misses to talk about with it,
oh,
too.
Oh, really? Okay.
So our last topic of this episode is Ted and Emmett house shopping together.
I love that Jennifer Taylor was going to be their real estate agent. Mm-hmm. She is working that hustle. Bless her.
There's some really nice directing from Kelly Macon again as Ted and Emmett move between the different houses. There's a little bit of split screen. They're stepping back and forth.
Oh, and here's a question I have because I couldn't tell for a second. Is it edited to be a split screen or did they have a set built to show two different rooms that are actually connected? Because I could have sworn that there was a moment when the camera was on Jennifer and we saw the two spaces. And I thought, maybe my mind's just messing with me.
It's amazing what you can do with a green screen.
But oh, yes.
We do find out that they go with the older house. And so knowing that they bought that house together, maybe they had built that full set. So
maybe, yes.
So maybe that was the key set, and then they just sort of had this little white matte painting for the other one.
Did you expect their taste to go the way they did?
No, not at all.
No, really?
Well, yes and no. I can expect that Ted would go for the most milquetoast,
move-in ready.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would expect Emmett to have something a little more eccentric.
But he wanted like...
He wanted vintage.
Vintage, cozy. I was very surprised at that.
I think it was a little bit of Hazelhurst, Mississippi going on there, where that's his probably old, what he grew up in.
His old Southern charm.
His Southern belle.
Yes.
Do you think that Emmett really had any standing to get angry with Ted about the house that Ted was going to get? Because Ted was paying for it.
Yeah, they keep saying, we bought a house, we bought a house. I was like, but did Emmett really put any stock in this down payment?
Emmett's finally like, fine, Teddy, just buy whatever you want. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like they kept touting that this was something they were going to buy together, but I don't know of Emmett to have.
Yeah, Ted's the porn kingpin. Emmett works in retail.
And he didn't get anything from George Shickles, so...
Right.
What do you...
So there's a little bit of a gap there.
Yes.
And I did think it was really sweet, though, that Ted bought the house that Emmett wanted just to make him happy. It's like, ah!
He's like, okay, y'all are kind of cute together. I'm a fan.
All right, let's talk about our hits and misses for this episode. Mm-hmm. My hit was Brian's Evil Ways with Justin. I didn't like them, but the drama was great and very useful for the story. It added... kind of a nice dark twist and torsion to the story. And it fit right in with Brian turning to the dark side of Stockwell's campaign. So I thought that story was a big hit. I hated to see Brian that way, mm-hmm. but I thought for the drama of it and for the story of it, it was really good.
My hit is that I was very into the political question in play here. I thought that in terms of the voter apathy that was going on, and yet there is still passion to get people to understand why it's important to vote. I think it very much mirrors the current voter apathy and that practice of if I'm not hurt by it, I don't care. And if I could go ahead and hop onto my miss is your hit. And I think even as you spoke about it, it's what really bugged me was Brian interfering with Justin's relationship, because it felt too much of a cheap ploy to drive the wedge between Justin and Ethan so that we know that Ethan is here temporarily, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a little bit of foreshadowing that we know Brian's going to win.
Yeah. If they allowed it to build out in an organic way where we understand that Ethan may be around for a while and that's okay. Because mm-hmm. I think Ethan is an interesting character. I think he is a good foil to Brian. And it would have been fun to keep that going.
Definitely. So my miss was Michael's load. This was comedy wrapping around something that I wish was more serious. Mm. Like, how does a lesbian couple go about artificial insemination? Like, what's the process with this? Instead, yes. The big lesbian moment was just gay male humor. And it could have been more. It was the same problem that I had with Melanie and Lindsay's wedding. It was wrapped in comedy. And it could have been much bigger events. It could have been landmark show moments.
Yeah, it played almost like a parody of itself.
Yeah, Michael running through the forest with his load.
Yes, know, I just in the eye rolled. Bank. It's just, I couldn't.
Yeah, I just wish that this would have been a bigger deal. Okay, so this has been episode 5 of season 3. There's nothing noble about being poor.
Next time, thanks to Brian's marketing savvy, Stockwell leads the polls.
Michael discovers Ben's steroid use, which I think he found in this episode.
Yeah, I think this should be like it confronts. Maybe yes. He confronts Ben about it. Ted is arrested when he and Emmett meet the neighbors.
I love that episode. Have you seen it yet?
I have not yet.
Yeah, I watched it already. That will be episode 6 of season 3, and it's called One Ring to Rule Them All. Thanks for listening. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us, and subscribe. It really does help more people find the show, and we'll be your best friend if you do.
We're on Twitter and Instagram at StillQueerAF, and you can like us on Facebook at StillQueerAsFolk, where we continue our conversations about the episode.
I'm on Instagram at Patrick Randall with no E's.
And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at MatthewPD.
So until next time, I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Still Queer as Folk was produced by me, Patrick Randall, for Slightly Unbalanced. Matt Dominguez wrote and performed the show with me. Still Queer as Folk is made with love in Chicago.
Still Queer as Folk.